Support for Yale Cancer Answers is provided by AstraZeneca, a biopharmaceutical business with a deep-rooted heritage in oncology and a commitment to developing cancer medicines for patients. Learn more at AstraZeneca-US.com. Welcome to Yale Cancer Answers with Drs. Anish Chagpar, Susan Higgins, and Stephen Gore. I'm Bruce Barber. Yale Cancer Answers is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care by welcoming oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer. This week, Dr. Stephen Gore welcomes Dr. Mario Strazabosco for a conversation about liver cancer. Dr. Strazabosco is director of the liver cancer program at Smilow Cancer Hospital, and Dr. Gore is director of hematological malignancies. Here's Dr. Stephen Gore.
So, tell us about liver cancer. I think many of our listeners think of any cancer that has gone to the liver as being liver cancer. That's not exactly right. Am I correct there?
Yeah, correct. So we did what most frequent forms are the so-called secondary liver cancer, otherwise called liver metastasis, where the liver is a target organ of other malignant tumor elsewhere in the body, and they metastasize to the liver.
Something like breast cancer or colon cancer,
and so on. Mm-hmm. These are metastatic cancer that develop in a normal liver. The bigger difference from the one that we are talking about today, which is a primary liver cancer, is that the liver is almost never normal. The liver cancer is actually one of the dreadful complications of having chronic liver disease.
Hmm.
Sometimes liver cancer can develop in a patient with otherwise normal or semi-normal liver, but most of the time, well, I would say 90% of the time in our geographic areas, is actually a complication of long-standing liver disease. For example, among the patient with liver cirrhosis, liver cancer arises with a frequency, an incidence of 5% per year.
So 5% per year in people with cirrhosis.
Right. And this is one of the reasons why these people is usually screened for liver cancer with at least ultrasound every 6 months. This is a very important issue because if you can diagnose the liver cancer in an early stage, there's a lot that can be done. But whereas if you don't do the screening and the cancer at the moment of the diagnosis is already advanced, as in many other cancer, there's little that can be done actually. So, you know, this opens several other questions about, how do I know that I have liver cirrhosis, for example, you know?
Well, that was one of my next questions.
Right.
But maybe before we get there, does it matter what the cause of the cirrhosis is? I know there's many forms of cirrhosis, right?
It does matter a lot. So there are many forms of cirrhosis. The most frequent one are due to hepatitis C, hepatitis B, alcoholic liver disease, and more recently, this new entity of non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, also called
fatty
NASH.
Liver.
Yeah, the bad kind of fatty liver, basically. Okay.
Okay.
Which is associated with metabolic liver disease, diabetes, overweight, obesity.
Well, there's none of that in our country.
No. It's actually
pretty common, right?
Pretty common here.
Yeah.
You know, you see less of it, for example, in Italy, where people is leaner and eat in a different way.
Mediterranean diet.
It's a whole Mediterranean diet.
But and they have to fit into those skinny jeans and everything there, right?
Yeah.
I'd never make it.
Me too. Me too. But it's actually, when I was practicing in Italy, I was a little skeptical about the existence of this form. Now, I'm practicing here, you see it. Yeah, huh. You absolutely do see it. So I would say that nowadays, these are the four most common causes of liver disease, epidemiologically speaking. And the important thing is that they're all preventable and treatable.
And do they all have a predilection to having liver cancer develop? Or
yes, that's independent
of the form of
cirrhosis. Of the form of cirrhosis. They do it with different mechanisms, of course. But, you know, hepatitis B virus is an oncogenic virus, you know.
Meaning that it causes cancer.
It causes cancer. It can integrate in the genome. It's a direct cause of cancer. Sometimes you can also have, it's one of the few cases where you can have liver cancer in the absence of cirrhosis, just with moderate liver disease. For example, when it is acquired very early. Okay, so the inflammatory component is not such that you develop severe liver disease, but the cancer is there and can integrate in the genome and activate some oncogene. Hepatitis C is different because there's not a direct oncogenic action, but it's the overall inflammation and repair chronically. Alcohol is more or less the same action. And
Inflammatory.
And also, you know, inflammatory or auto-inflammatory is also the pathogenesis of the hepatitis connected with fatty liver when, you know.
I see. So what you were saying with a hepatitis B, if I understand correctly, is that the DNA from the virus actually becomes part of our DNA?
Yeah, there's integration.
I see.
And this can transactivate some oncogenes.
Some genes which can lead to cancer.
Yeah, but you still have to have some sort of even moderate damage to promote proliferation, you know.
For the cells to start growing
faster. Right, right. But so this is a direct action.
Gotcha.
But so, again, we should spend some, you know, words of prevention and also treatment. Once you identify that you have liver disease, now you can treat it. Hepatitis C has, you know, great drugs. You can eradicate the virus now.
Right.
Hepatitis B, you don't eradicate the virus, but you suppress the virus replication, so the inflammation goes down.
Using medication?
Using medication, antivirals. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that if you are able to identify and treat this disease before it gets cirrhotic, you do prevent significantly the development of liver cancer. Hmm. It's different when you apply this treatment in a patient who already has cirrhosis. Mm-hmm. Then the risk of liver cancer decreases, but not doesn't zero. So, you know. And alcoholic liver disease, of course, is preventable with sacrifice.
Yeah, but that's not easy for people who really suffer from alcoholism.
Yes.
That's a terrible problem, right?
Yes, although sometimes it's not really being alcoholist. You know, see, one of the things that people, it's good to understand is that often liver cancer is the result of not one single cause, but a combination of different causes.
Right.
So it's very easy. You don't know you have hepatitis C, so you live a normal life. You eat and drink socially.
Right.
You don't get drunk. And you grow fat. So now you are acquiring three different risk factors.
I see.
For liver cancer, and they don't just add together, they multiply.
Mm.
So the risk is tremendously increasing if you have three risk factors. And these three risk factors are so common. Hepatitis C is so prevalent among baby boomers, for example, you know, and
it's the curse of our generation.
It's the curse of our, you're right. So, you know, it's very easy to have three major risk factors and don't know it.
Mm.
So that's one of the difficulties that we're facing. But so they can be prevented, and progression to advanced chronic disease can be prevented by etiologic treatment or behavioral, you know, changing lifestyles and whatever. And then you have the screening phase, which is not really a screening phase. It's a oncologic surveillance in the population at risk. So the physicians should be able to identify patient with risk factors, and this patient should, you know, do an ultrasound, see what the liver morphology is.
Mm.
Now there are also ways to understand how fibrotic is the liver. For example, there's an easy test. It's called FibroScan, for example. You just measure the elasticity of the liver.
How spongy it is, really, or bouncy
it
is, right?
Exactly. So you hit the abdominal wall and record, you know, how it progresses. Is it progressing through some sort of wood or sponge? And it gives you, yes, it's not rocket science.
Are they hitting it physically, or are they hitting it with sound
waves? There's a little probe.
Oh, no.
That you apply on the abdominal wall. And it's like,
it gives you a little thump?
Yes. And then record the wavelength, so how this elastic wavelength comes back, and there you have an ember.
But it doesn't hurt.
No, not at all. Yeah. And above that ember, you have significant fibrosis, and should probably see an hepatologist, and you know, and start, of course, doing several things that will prevent you to go on to cirrhosis and to liver cancer. Hmm.
So, you know, we do probably have several baby boomers or quite a few in our audience. Liver cancer, how common is it? And should all these boomers on the in our listening office be audience running to their doctor and saying, I need a fibro scan?
Right. I don't want to frighten my fellow baby boomers, okay?
Maybe we have enough to worry about.
To take good care of your health as you would do for any other disease. You know, strangely enough, most of the risk factors are the same for cardiac liver, for cardiac disease and for liver disease and for many other cancers, because diabetes is a risk factor as well as different other
cancers.
And
obesity.
And obesity as well. So it's basically a set of genes that predisposes you to have this sort of problem. So don't panic. But you know, the bad part is that actually liver cancer incidence is rising in Western countries. It used to be very high in Africa, Asia,
Asian,
you know,
countries, right?
Following the epidemiology of hepatitis B or aflatoxin. But now it's more widespread also in the Western society, and also particularly in the U.S. This is due to, you know, to some generational aging or migrations, you know, by people coming from high risk countries. But so, you know, the latest statistics are about, you know, 6.1 per 1,000. 100,000 people.
Six cases of liver cancer per 100,000 people.
Yes. And Connecticut in particular is one of the states with the higher incidence. I don't know why, but.
Well, we're glad you're here.
Yeah. It's about 7.5. Okay?
Wow.
Yeah. Which is that we ran some estimates, very limited. I think they are in defect, but there are more than 200 new cases per year just in Connecticut.
Wow.
And these are patients that are very complex, because the characteristic of liver cancer, as I said before, is that you have this liver cancer in a patient with chronic liver disease. And so you have two components. One is an oncologic component.
Mm-hmm. It's the cancer.
The cancer, right? The other is a failing organ. So it's a cancer in an organ who is failing.
Mm.
And that's the complexity.
Right, sure.
All right? You don't have a failing colon.
Right.
You just take it out.
Right.
And do all the other things that you need to do. But here you have a patient with a very complex internal Medici syndrome, which is the, you know, end-stage liver disease or whatever. So you have all sorts of complications. You don't want to cure the cancer or lose the patient to liver disease, right?
That would be a bad endpoint, I think.
Right.
Well, we're going to pick this up after the break, but at this point, we are going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about liver cancer with Dr. Strazzabosco.
Support for Yale Cancer Answers is provided by AstraZeneca, working to change the cancer paradigm through personalized medicine. Learn more at AstraZeneca-US.com. There are many obstacles to face when quitting smoking, as smoking involves the potent drug nicotine, but it's a very important lifestyle change, especially for patients undergoing cancer treatment. Quitting smoking has been shown to positively impact response to treatments, decrease the likelihood that patients will develop second malignancies, and increase rates of survival. Tobacco treatment programs are currently being offered at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center and at Smilo Cancer Hospital. Smilo Cancer Hospital's tobacco treatment program operates on the principles of the U.S. Public Health Service Clinical Practice Guidelines. All treatment components are evidence-based, and therefore all patients are treated with FDA-approved first-line medications for smoking cessation, as well as smoking cessation counseling that stresses appropriate coping skills. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Answers. This is Dr. Stephen Gore, and I'm joined tonight by my guest, Dr. Mario Strazabosco. And we are discussing the diagnosis and treatment of liver cancer. The audience will probably not realize that I'm trying to modify my pronunciation of the O's in your name after the dialogue we had off mic, but that's too complicated for my pidgin Italian that I get mainly from traveling in Europe. So before the break, you were telling me about how complicated it is to treat liver cancer because it's usually in the context of a failing liver. Are you a surgeon or a medical physician?
I'm an hepatologist, which is internal medicine.
Gotcha.
It's a branch of internal medicine, yes.
Gotcha. So, but a large part of the therapy for liver cancer is surgical. Is that correct?
It's
no?
It's in part. Right. So
tell me.
Right. So let's begin by saying that most medical oncology chemotherapy don't really work in this cancer for two main reasons. Reason number one, this, as I said, is a failing liver. You can't go with the. You have to be very careful of drug toxicity, and you know.
Sure, because we need the liver to metabolize drugs.
Right. Exactly. So you have to be careful, and you can't use the full strength.
Yeah, I understand.
And the second thing is that the liver is actually the organ that usually metabolizes and gets rid of the drug. And so it's actually specifically designed not to be offended.
Right. Oh, I see. Got it.
Right. And it has some...
care of itself.
Right. Metabolizing enzyme and pumps that push the drug outside in the bile. And this cancer, you know, if they are not completely lost their differentiation, they do remember the job they were doing before, and somehow they become resistant to most of the usual chemotherapeutic agents. There are in the pipeline some targeted small molecules that would interfere with some important signal transduction mechanism. Okay, some of them are already. One of them specifically is already being used. Other will come, but it's still a limited number of patients that can be treated in this way. They have to have an almost perfect liver function, and usually we use these drugs in patients that has failed the other treatments.
Hmm.
So, what are the other treatments? First of all, they apply mostly on patients with early to intermediate stage.
Okay.
This is one more reason to have an early
get
diagnosis.
Get screened, right?
So a patient can be, depending on the stage and on several other local factors, local meaning where is it in the liver, the patient can undergo resection.
Meaning surgical removal.
Surgical removal of the cancer, taking away a piece of the liver or of different size, okay? As you know, the liver can grow back.
Mm.
That doesn't happen that often if your cirrhosis is advanced.
I see.
So you have to take this into account. For example, one thing is taking away a metastasis. One thing is taking away a primary liver tumor, because the regeneration potential of the liver is different.
So what you're saying is that if it's a colon cancer that has spread with one or two metastases to a normal liver, you can sometimes cut out those metastases and help.
Right.
But in this case, the liver cancer, because it's growing in a sick organ, the liver may not
grow back. You can still cut
out
the tumor, but you have to make sure that there are certain parameters that are satisfied. For example, there cannot be varices, the bilirubin has to be below one. There are several
criteria
that limits the applicability. Still, it's one of the best treatments you can do. Right?
I see.
Then if you cannot, the patient cannot undergo surgery, you can use several different interventional radiology treatment. And just to give you an example, one is called radiofrequency ablation. You insert a probe in the tumor and you use microwave to cook the tumor, basically. This is what you do. Right?
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Right. And it's very efficacious.
And is the probe inserted through the skin, or do you?
That can be done mostly is done percutaneously
through the skin.
Right. Sometimes can be done laparoscopically,
okay.
Depending on the location. If the location is difficult to access through the skin or it's too risky, otherwise it's just like a biopsy.
Wow. Okay.
It's not painful. And
it sounds painful.
No, it isn't. And because, you know, the liver only has pain, nervous termination on the capsule.
Outside the liver.
Right. The capsule that
surrounds the liver?
Surrounds the liver, that has pain.
But not inside the liver.
Not inside the liver.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So, and the results are outstanding, particularly if tumors are small.
Okay.
If tumors are a little larger or they have a clear arterial irroration, you can use TACE. TACE is the acronym from transarterial chemoembolization. And basically, you go through the hepatic artery.
Okay.
Cannulate very selectively the feeding artery.
That goes to the tumor.
The tumor. Because you know, the liver gets most of its blood from the normal liver from the portal vein.
Which comes from the gut.
It comes from the gut, yes. And the tumor gets its feeding from the artery.
Okay.
So you can clearly isolate that portion of the liver from the surrounding portion. You can embolize, so make it hypoxic. But also you can add some chemotherapeutic agents at very high concentration locally.
Hmm.
And they stay there.
So you're injecting the chemo right into the tumor?
Right. You can use microsphere. You can use some oil, like lipiodol, that get engulfed by the cells.
Okay.
So the concentration of the chemotherapeutic agent is even higher.
Okay.
And then there are several variations of this.
I see.
In some cases, rather than injecting a chemotherapeutic agent, you can inject a radiotherapeutic agent like yttrium-90.
Radioactive material.
Right. So it stays there. Mm-hmm. And because this tumor is actually very sensitive to radiation.
Hmm.
He said it's very difficult and dangerous to irradiate the whole liver because of the hilum and so on. But with this system, you can actually hit with a high radiation a small area in the liver.
Hmm.
And then, again, there are several variations of these main sort of treatments, all right? Thing is, it's not clear immediately which patient should get what. Because basically these are all a treatment that are reserved to patients with early or intermediate cancer. But then to go on the nitty-gritty of which one or the other is not so easy. And this is one of the main messages that I hope to convey, that these are patients that need to be seen by specialized centers, not being treated by whatever is available in a certain community or a certain hospital. You need and has very high, very good results with each of these techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what usually is done around this multidisciplinary tumor board that include the hepatologist, transplant surgeons,
radiation
oncologists. All the people that provide care, they are together and discuss the case.
Mm.
And this is what we call personalized medicine in this cancer so far, waiting for some more, you know, biological and molecular biology clues and leads. Last is the chance of transplantation. This is the only solid organ that can be treated by transplant. So the results of transplantation are outstanding.
You're talking about transplanting the whole liver.
Transplanting the whole liver.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
You take care of both diseases. You take care of the cancer. You take care of the cirrhosis. All right? Now, there are limitations. to your ability to do so. The cancer has to be in a stage where the likelihood of metastasis is absolutely zero. Livers are few, and so on. But, you know, the transplantation is part of the algorithm, is part of the possibilities that we can offer to our patients. And again, the matter is this patient should seek care and be referred to places that run this multidisciplinary approach, because sometimes the treatment is sequential, is multidisciplinary and sequential. You start by resecting a patient, then you do a TACE, and then you do an RFA, and finally this patient is still in the stage in which it can be transplanted, and it'll be transplanted. Or you list the patient for transplantation, and in the meanwhile that you wait, you need to take care of the patient so it doesn't grow out of the stage. And so you do everything you need to do in order to keep it at bay while the liver comes. So it's, I would say that respect of several years ago, the prognosis is improving because of all this treatments, but the complexities remains high, and unfortunately, liver cancer is still one of the few, or very few, tumor in which mortality is not decreasing yet.
Not decreasing.
No. So all the other cancers, as you teach me, are improving.
Yeah.
The prognosis is improving, and liver cancer would still. Not, but they are surviving much better.
And is that because people are still being diagnosed at a higher stage?
Because of that, because you do have liver disease, because, you know, for example, until a couple of years ago, we didn't have these new antivirals for hepatitis C, and we are expecting that the prognosis will change. So sometimes you treat the cancer, but still the liver doesn't go as it should. So it's a very complex environment where you need to have the collaboration of many different providers. But this but the point is that this collaboration must not be random. Okay, otherwise you have a nebulosa in which the patient's itinerary, several point of entry, several different outcomes.
It's very confusing, right?
It can be
overwhelming, right?
Right, and so. That's the reason why many centers are actually organizing themselves in multidisciplinary programs.
Basically, one-stop shopping.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how does somebody find, you know, let's say somebody doesn't live in our area where obviously, you know, we have a center, for example. Are there online resources for Centers of Excellence for Liver Cancer? Or do
yeah, of course, you can look up on the web. Website, and you know there are most of the major institutions
should have such as
okay. I think that the big point is go to centers of excellence and refer your patient to centers of excellence.
Ask the right questions. Are you a center of excellence, right? Or are you, well, I think, you know, obviously people want to take care of the patients the best way, so hopefully they'll refer patients if they don't really feel like they're adequately.
When you call, you know, one it would be nice if all the center would put their outcomes and volumes and in the public domain.
Dr. Mario Strazabosco is director of the liver cancer program at Smilo Cancer Hospital. If you have questions, the address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and past editions of the program are available in audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. I'm Bruce Barber, reminding you to tune in each week to learn more about the fight against cancer here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.